Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com. Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the podcast for the week of June 13th, 2022. I'm your host, Zach, and this time we have Chris.
Hello.
And we got a bunch of stuff to talk about this week, but we have to kick things off, unfortunately, with some sad news. Was another fantastic legendary character actor. They've been like dropping like flies recently. But Philip Baker Hall passed away at age, I think he was 90. So on earlier this week, on the 12th, or last weekend, he passed away. But yeah, so many, I mean, 185 credits. I mean, he's been in tons of stuff. I mean, like a Paul Thomas Anderson regular, like he was in Paul Thomas Anderson's first movie, Hard Eight, and then was in pretty much everyone after that, except he wasn't Licorice Pizza, but I think pretty much like Magnolia and Boogie Nights. I mean, super memorable Boogie Nights scene. I don't know if you remember that, Chris, but like, he's the one who shows up at Burt Reynolds' house, and he's just like, the future of porn is VHS. You gotta get everything on video. Like, he has this whole like rant about like
editing
porn. Yeah,
I think I remember that. It's one of those things where he pretty much plays the same character. You hire him for be like the stern, older gentleman that shows up.
Yeah, he did a lot of like judges and like cops and stuff. I know a lot of people were sharing like his Seinfeld guest spot where he was Lieutenant Bookman, the library cop.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like one of the greatest scenes in sci-fi history.
It's funny because it's taken straight out of like a detective noir, or not something noir, but just like kind of like a police story drama procedural.
Yeah, like well, like he's treating like this like overdue book as like a murder case basically. But I mean, yeah, he was like Rush Hour in Enemy of the State and The Rock and Air Force One. Tons of movies, other TV shows as well. Just great, like super memorable, super distinctive, you always knew when he showed up. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so RIP Philip Baker Hall. So moving on, not a lot of trailers this week, but we did get the first teaser for I think something that we've been very highly anticipating, which is the TV debut of Sylvester Stallone. So he's going to be in a Paramount Plus show called Tulsa King, and we got the teaser for that. It's going to be out in November this year. It's another Taylor Sheridan show, so it's like the 12th Taylor Sheridan show or something on Paramount Plus. He made Yellowstone, he made 1883, Mayor Kingstown. He's got two more Yellowstone shows coming up on there, so he's just basically most like a very large chunk of Paramount Plus is just Tyler Sheridan shows. But Tulsa King is Stallone is playing this Italian mobster, Dwight Manfredi, who gets released from prison after 25 years, and then his bosses kind of send him to, well, basically they exile him to like Tulsa, and he's just like, what the fuck, I was in jail for you guys for like 2 decades, I didn't say anything, and you're sending me like fucking like Midwest or whatever. But then so he decides basically I'm gonna like make my own crime empire. I'm gonna like get my own crew. I'm gonna make my own like crime empire, like Tulsa, in the Midwest.
It almost sounds like a Fargo.
It's got it definitely has like Fargo vibes. Definitely that sort of thing. Especially the cast is like a lot of, like comedic people alongside Stallone. So like Andrea Savage and Martin Starr and Max Casella and like a bunch of other people are like who are like normally like in comedic stuff are like co-starring in this one. So maybe we'll have that kind of like weirder Fargo humor to it. But I mean just Stallone in a TV show for the first time ever is exciting. So It's only like a 30-second teaser. Hopefully maybe we get like a longer trailer soon. They'll like get dive into some more stuff with it, but yeah, it looks like an interesting idea. And like yeah, just see Stallone every week or whatever. Like if it's gonna be like weekly or I'm pretty sure Paramount Plus like does the weekly model. They haven't done any sort of like binge. They haven't dropped anything like a binge model. So
I guess I want people to come back and, you know, keep watching, really delay their subscription.
Yeah. So, yes, yeah, so November 13th is when that Tulsa King is going to debut. So, yeah, if there's another trailer before then, we'll definitely dive into it and talk about it more. And then we also got some news this week about another new Disney Plus Marvel show. We're getting a Wonder Man show. Which is it's going to be show run and probably like directing at least a couple episodes by Destin Daniel Cretton, who brought us Shang-Chi. And also Andrew Guest, who was the head writer on Community in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is going to be co-writing and co-producing this Wonder Man show. And it's probably gonna start shooting next year, so this is probably gonna be a ways, like it's gonna be like a 2024 show probably. So it's a ways off, but it got announced this week. So
were you ever a Wonder Man comic reader?
I've seen some I've read stuff, some stuff with him. I wasn't like, oh man, Wonder Man. Yeah.
I mostly see him in things and I'm like, all right, that's cool.
I think the last thing I really saw, like, I think he was in Ursmay's Heroes, the cartoon, I think. That, like, it was, like, one of the characters on there. So, like, that's probably, like, the last, like, big thing I saw him in. Well, apparently James Gunn wanted him to be in, as like, Nathan Fillion to play him in Guardians of the Galaxy Online 2, but that didn't happen.
I kind of remember that.
And no casting news. I mean, this is so far off. Like, yeah, they haven't cast Wonder Man yet, but
just Nathan Fillion again.
I'd be down for that.
Yep. He looks like he's getting younger. Whenever he's like the rookie, still looks good.
But yeah, so the Marvel Disney Plus shows, you know, keep rolling on. So we'll this will be whatever. I don't know. Are we in phase five by that point? I don't know. Well, I don't think it's really clear like where like phase four is ending, or like where phase four is going.
Yeah, the future. It's just kind of like, I don't know. It just seems like
there's a lot of balls in the air right now for phase four. There's like the
half.
It's like the whoever that got like the what's his name from the Eternals is like judging the entire Earth based on like
It just seems like one or two things are happening. Like either like half the heroes are just up and quitting or dying. Like, oh, this is my retirement year, or this is like, oh, my final sacrifice, right? Yeah. Or it's heroes that like I can't wait to get a mentor because I'm way too young to be on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So, like. There's no even balance yet where it's like we have like a theory of who the like big bad is. There's a couple of big bads. It can go in like one of three directions.
Yeah, I mean, well, some version of Kang is going to be showing up. It's like I think next year in Quantumania. Right. And yeah, and then we had like I can't remember his name from Eternals, the judge, giant red judge guy. Yeah.
Floating around.
And there's like, oh yeah, other multiverse stuff. So yeah, who knows? It's kind of, there's definitely not like we're not really, it doesn't seem like it's a bit looser than like we're building to like Thanos or something like the previous phases. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff happening.
Yeah, we just kind of like are just waiting for more, even though we're about. Two things into phase four.
I think we're a couple things. I think all the shows last year were phase four.
I don't know. I'm gonna like combine a few where it's like Moon Knight showed us nothing in the Grey Universe.
Yeah.
It just showed Moon Knight. And then.
Yeah, just the Egyptian gods exist.
Right. Okay. And then Loki was good. Like, that was a good introduction, but all they did was just get us ready for Kang, which is going to be another year away.
Yeah.
But that was like 2 years ago, if you think about it from then.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got WandaVision, which all that really did was show
set
us.
Set Wanda up for
set Wanda,
multiverse,
yeah. Doctor Strange maybe kind of did something.
They set up some, like, new, like some sort of breach is going to happen or something, or like he has to go stop like a multiverse breach with Charlize Theron. Maybe. Like,
maybe we don't know yet.
And I feel like, and then I feel like Thor Love and Thunder isn't really going to, like, I mean, maybe we'll set up something, like, I mean, we'll see what the post-credit scenes are, but, like, I feel like that it seems like it's going to be pretty self-contained, and just, like, Thor and crew fighting Gore the God Butcher or whatever, so.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the own movie that it just, if they try to squeeze in more plot, you're like, how?
Yeah.
I don't mind if they do. It just seems like that movie just be bloated. But I also heard that movie's also, the runtime is one of the shortest and recent.
Yeah. I feel like it's gonna be like a short, fun, self-contained, but not. It probably won't have any like really big, like, we're not gonna get like a. I mean, maybe, who knows, we'll see in a month or two. But like, I don't think there's gonna be like a big, like, oh, here's Kang set up, or like here's like a. Like big bad setup stuff. Like, we're gonna see Harry Styles again, or whatever his Firefox, whatever his character is. Star Fox, or whatever.
Yeah. So I mean, he's not supposed to be the big bad, he's just supposed to be the helpful character, but I can't see like a Star Fox show.
No, they're setting up like that's supposed to be like the Eternals sequel. Like they're gonna like team up to like.
Right. But I'm saying like it's not like his character is such gonna be a demand that in the future we're gonna see like a Starfire, like Star Fox show.
I mean, who knows? I mean, a couple years from now, who knows?
I don't see it.
Everyone's gonna get a show.
But I just the more I think about the Eternals, I'm like, I forgot that happened. It just gets pushed back further and further away. Even Shang-Chi was just like, oh, it's cool. Are we going to ever address this? And then after the events of, like, Doctor Strange 2, I was like, oh, yeah, like, Wong was this sort of in Shang-Chi. And mentions this to no one about this dude rocking, like, alien bracelets. And then, I don't know, other things.
That are communicating with someone in somewhere, like, putting out a signal or something.
Yeah. There's a signal going somewhere. Where's it going? We don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, I would care if I knew more.
Yeah, hopefully we'll find out more soon from some of these upcoming Marvel shows and movies. But other news from this week. We're getting because Squid Game was the biggest Netflix show of all time, and Netflix is apparently like trying to like get all, like, you know, cash in as much as they can. So they're getting they've created a Squid Game The Challenge, which is a reality show based on Squid Game, which I think like didn't like was like Mr. Beast or something on YouTube like did like basically like turn his backyard into like Squid Game or something.
Yeah, I from understood he made his own like challenges and fun things for like $1 million. It was something like he didn't try to give him a crazy amount of money, but it still was a lot just to be on his thing.
But this is gonna be like a, you know, Survivor, competition reality show. They're gonna compete in challenges that are inspired by the show plus some new ones. And then they get eliminated one by one or like in groups, and then the winner gets $4.56 million.
That's a lot of cheddar.
That's a lot of money.
Do they get it if like everyone eliminates, or they can do the thing where they split it at the end?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, because there's 456 people competing in it, so that's it's. I guess it's like a million free, or like however that breaks down to for each person playing or something. But it's good. I guess that it's gonna be a 10-episode series. And it's already got a second season, so there's gonna be two seasons of this Squid Game reality show. So yeah, this is like totally contrary to what Squid Game was about, though. Like the whole point of Squid Game was like no one wanted to be there, and like it was horrible. Like
no, they wanted to be there.
Oh, they did. Okay.
You didn't watch it yet, did you?
I haven't watched it yet. No.
Yeah, watch it. It's one of those things where you think it's like they don't understand the first time, but when they explain the rules, like. This is why I got aggravated, if you remember when I was talking about it. Because the show is like, oh no, like, if you don't want to play, like, we won't force you. Like, you have to, like, you're going to have to, like, put your heart into it if you want to be here. Like, that's a better game for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the first round, like, they don't quite understand, like, the concept. They're just like, this can't be real. Like, you know, it's that typical, like, no. And then, they do, like, one game, the red light, green light, that goes horribly right, where basically, like, everyone comes to the realization, like, holy shit, this is real, right? Mm-hmm. Then they tell them, like, hey, you know, like, congratulations, you made it this far. And they're like, can we quit? And, like, now, here's a spoiler alert, Zach, but
yeah.
I guess for you, because you're, like, one of the few people that was holding out. They let them go. Like, they leave. Okay? Like, okay. It's not like, oh, they're like, oh, like, you don't want to come back? Okay, like, game's over. Go home. And then they do. And then, like, they realize and they go back. They're like, shit, I really need that money, though. Like, coming back wasn't as good. I was gone for maybe, like, a weekend. And I realized, like, I'm still horribly in debt. And, like, I've got no other choice. But all the candidates in that game, a good amount of them are, like, really bad at money, or, like, they have horrible problems where, like, they have to be there, right? So they call them up again, and they're like, hey, can I come back? And they're like, yeah, okay. And they come back. And that's the whole fucking show. Like, every other episode, or some characters go, like, I don't want to be here. I regret this again. And then they kind of have that motion where it's like, oh, you sure? Oh, it's like, this isn't worth the money, blah, blah, blah. And just like, oh, these people are dying. Oh. It's just like, you came back. It's not like they weren't fucking around. They showed their card heavy about what this game is going to be about early. So that's why in the Squid Games thing, you know, it's more like, no, it just like, it's a balance where it's like, you have these like people who have really no other option. And then you have this thing where it's like, if you win, you'll be fine. But you basically have to be okay with like blood money. Like, you know, you earned this through all this. But like, again, you agree to this. It wasn't like you're being kidnapped. It's a total like you sign up for it. And I get the first time where you signed up and you didn't quite understand the rules. The second time's on you. But can you believe there's a third time, Zach? And that's what this fucking second season is. It's just like, wait a minute, what? You want more? They'll give you more. So I think that's why some people, when they heard, like, oh, they're making a real-life Squid Games thing, it's like, yeah, that's still not a good concept. It's a great show idea, but if you're making, like, a reality show, it's like, we're not too far off from already how Squid Game's already happening. Like, you know, like, all it takes is that one, like, oh, would you like to pay for, like, a pay-per-view version? And now it's like, great, we just made Squid Games.
Yeah, we're like, it's like a couple steps away from, like, Most Dangerous Game. Like,
yeah. No, Most Dangerous Game is a hunting thing. This is even worse than that. Like, at least it's like you have a chance to fight back against, like, whoever is in control. This is like, no, like, the people in control, like, a good amount of the people who are paying to see this fight, you'll never meet, you know? Like, it's a business that, like, in the show, they explain. It's like a gladiator thing, you know? It's just like, the people in the audience isn't really the bad guy, you know? Like, they're the ones who, it's their choice to pay for this, but it's a service that was there. Like, it wasn't like they invented it and then they only show it to themselves. Like, they, you know, like, you're not sort of guilty. I mean, granted, like, it's not great overall, but in the philosophical part, it's like, no, like, this was a service that existed. You're just like, whatever, I'm rich and bored with life, so I get it. This is just what rich people do. So it's like, do you still want to be rich? And then the majority is like, yeah, I want to be that rich. I want to be human gladiator rich. And it's like, all right, like, that's messed up, but okay, if you'll pay the money, the crazy amount of money to see this fight. Mm-hmm. And we're almost there. Like, you know, in society, all the pieces are moving together. Mm-hmm. And it's like, can we just do Ninja Warrior? It's like, no. We're going to do, like, heartbreaking. I hope they do this. Okay, so wrap on that. I hope they do heartbreaking, like, intros to these people who play this game. Like, something where it's like, if you're going to make Squid Games the real game, give me something where it's like, holy crap, that girl needs money to, like, pay for her, like, some sort of, you know what I mean? It sounds really messed up.
Yeah.
Like, that's the drama of it. It's like, you know, she needs that money. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to pay for, like, college.
Yeah, it's gonna be all like real world, like the challenge people.
Yeah, give me, as messed up as that is, that at least is proper. If you're gonna make a Squid Games, give me like that. It sounds really messed up when I say it out loud, but Jesus, like, really drilling home, like, you shouldn't want this in real life. Like, you should definitely be like, Entered Fantasy is good, but I mean, I'm guilty already. I'm already have Netflix. It's not like I'm paying more money to see the Squid Games like add on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's to me, like, that's the Squid Game show of, like, all right, like, give me something where it's like, oh, if I don't get this, like, I'm pretty much, like, homeless. And it's just like, what? It's like, yeah, like, I need this money right now, or else, like, you know, like, give me people who are terrible with money and then put them on the show. Not just like, hey, I saw Squid Games on TV, I'm a big fan, and I go to the gym now and then, I'm physical, let me play these games. Like, nah. Buff dudes aren't joining Squid Games. Like, that's what the show is about. It's like, it's just like everyone comes from different ages and groups and cultures. Well, mostly Korean. But yeah, that's my Squid Games rant.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out. I think they're filming it later this year, so that it'll probably be like a next year a Netflix show. So, but coming to Netflix sometime in the near future. We're getting at least two seasons of an actual Squid Game reality show, reality competition. So, another news, probably the craziest news of the week. We got some news about Joker 2. So, I believe last week, Todd Phillips posted like to his Instagram saying like that the script was done for Joker 2. It was Joker like Folie à Deux, which is like kind of like a French, like, it's like a French condition that affects like multiple people or something.
Uh-huh.
It's like, yeah, like a it's like a shared delusional disorder is like the subtitle of the movie.
Oh, okay. Is there a French word for it, like, especially for like shared hallucination?
Yeah, folie à deux. Joker folie à deux. But yeah, but the crazy news that this week is that apparently Lady Gaga is in early talks to appear as Harley Quinn for this Joker sequel, and this Joker sequel is going to be a musical.
I don't know. I thought that was more of like there's a musical sequence. I think it actually be a legit musical.
There's like it's saying it's going to be a full blown musical, like so. And you would assume if Lady Gaga is cast as Harley Quinn that she's probably going to write, like, at least one song for it, or multiple songs for it. And Joaquin Phoenix is, like, he's expected, like, pretty much going to return. They're just, like, hashing out some, like, very, like, final details. But, like, he's pretty much also have to come back. It's not, like, 100% officially that he's back yet, but it's almost there. And, yeah, Lady Gaga talks are early right now, but... Yeah, I don't even know what to think about a Joker 2 musical. Like what even is it?
I mean,
what's the story of it? Like do they get even more crazy with like the Bruce Wayne Batman connections. Like,
does it just take place on a stage, like a weird, like Gus Van Sant movie?
Maybe the whole thing is like, because they, you know, obviously ended with like Arthur Fleck in like the like mental hospital. Like, maybe the whole thing is just like he's just having like some crazy hallucination where it's like he just imagines a musical or something.
I could see that. I could see basically like it's all in his head.
Yeah.
And then they just
Lady Gaga's doctor.
And so he just kind of forms. Quinzel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he forms the whole plot. As stupid as that is, I could see that, you know?
Yeah.
And would it be fine? I'm okay with it. Like, the more I think about it, like, no one really was expecting to see what the Joker was going to be like and be, like, this cool and dramatic movie that, you know, took a very crazy subject and really added that Martin Scorsese, like, filter through it. So,
yeah.
You know, I just think this Joker definitely is more grounded and definitely is that, like, he's not the typical comic book. It would be like a standalone, maybe a one-shot comic series, like a one-shot issue of a Joker thing that was just like, what if you remove all of the fantastic elements and just left with the gritty, like, you know, sad facts about Joker?
Yeah.
And that was good. But then you kind of go, okay, now everyone's singing. You know, like, all right, like, let's see how this goes.
Everyone's seeing Lady Gaga songs.
Yeah, so I'm like, let's just see what happens. Where now, instead of like a drama, we're going to get like a comedy musical, because most musicals are like, very few are like,
I mean, there could be like dramatic musicals.
Like
Les Miserables, yeah. Like, like Joker 2 is like the Les Miserables of DC.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, is that the angle? I just clicked it together. I'm like, I can see it.
It would be like, it's either going to be like amazing or like just an absolute train wreck. Like, I don't think there's any middle ground for what this thing should be.
Okay, now let me ask you this question. Do you consider A Star Is Born a musical?
I don't think A Star Is Born is a musical. It's like it's like a music movie. I think a musical has to be like, it's like, because like all the songs in like a Star Is Born is like, they're actually like, it's, they're singing it in like the real world, and like it's like to an audience. It's like in concerts and stuff. Like, a musical is just like people break on the songs and like they're singing their emotions or whatever. Like, and it's not actually happening. Like. Or it's happening in like the reality of the movie, but it's not like a concert or for like a performance. It's like we're in the middle of the hall and now we're gonna start singing. Like,
okay.
I feel like musicals have to, it's like not like a, you know, like term for like music that's like actually occurring in like the universe of the movie or whatever.
Like, plot? I know what you mean. Like, it's like, it's all in their head, but for some reason, it's happening.
Yeah, diegetic music. So, like...
Oh, background. Yes.
Diegetic music is, like, actually, like, occurring in the, reality of the movie or the TV show. So, like, A Star Is Born is, like, concerts and radio. Like, they're performing it for, like, people. It's, like, actually happening. And then a musical is, like, you know, like, not... They're not, it's just happening, like, but it's actually like they're like just like it's like their inner, it's like people's inner thoughts, but expressed through like music and stuff. So musicals are like way more heightened and crazy than a movie about music.
So, you know, I feel like if it's a full blown musical, it's gonna be kind of like, haha, like this is way different than we ever thought we would see. But it's diegetic stuff where it's just like, oh, like
they're actually seeing in the middle of like it's mental hospital or like on the streets of Gotham or something.
Yeah. It's like, oh, You just put on a radio and sing to that? No. Oh, you're straight up gonna sing through like a weird montage.
Yeah.
But also, is it maybe? See, you can't do the Joker Harley Quinn love story because people didn't really want to see that. And by today's standard, that isn't gone so well because people just love Harley Quinn being Harley Quinn.
So yeah, I feel like that'd be like a pretty big like regression. Yeah, like because like. Yeah, the Harley Quinn animated show and like the Suicide Squad Harley is like so far away from like that version of Harley. That'd be like a really weird like, and she's back with the Joker. Like,
yeah. So that's why I'm like, that's not a good look.
But yeah, I guess we'll see. We'll see how this if this casting shakes out and like what the hell this thing is as it develops. So. And then the last bit of news for this week is that we got some news that there's going to be a Duke Nukem movie, which I believe Paramount was trying to get one going with John Cena like a couple years ago, and that kind of fizzled out. And this is a totally new attempt by Legendary. Legendary has picked up the rights to Duke Nukem, and the guys who made Cobra Kai are going to be producing and writing and possibly one of them is possibly going to be directing it. So. Yeah, so Duke Nukem possibly with like that Cobra Kai kind of, you know, like self-referential like meta, like I would be into like a if they did Duke Nukem like how they did Johnny on Cobra Kai, where it's like maybe like a washed up Duke or something, like
I could see that. I can also see if basically they mess up and they do like a Sonic, and it's like they just pulled Duke Nukem's in a video game. And he comes to like the real world.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Do you think or something similar to that, where he's basically like in one dimension or a video game, and then some reason he lands on modern day Earth, and then it's like all the things he says and does is being like corrected by like a companion friend.
Yes, I would be into like a like yeah, have Duke be exactly how he's in the games, and then everyone just be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like,
I could see that. I wouldn't hate it as bad, but I could see like that's how you can kind of patchwork him without kind of explaining to like newcomers like why this exists.
Yeah.
Because you go straight hard into the lore. And you just kind of like, I don't know, just be like prepared to see John Cena talk
well,
about
tits. We'll psych me John Cena, but.
Oh. But so, you know, it's going to be some John Cena looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I can go either way. Duke Nukem to me has been like on this like back burner franchise character. I just, if he's done well, great, you know?
Well, I mean, and speaking of John Cena, like, If a Duke Nukem movie is like basically like Peacemaker, like I'd be into that.
Yes. It's like a great, it's like a good template where basically he is just like Duke Nukem, and either one of two things happen: he's pulled into the universe by what cosmic means, or he's always been Duke Nukem, and like he's the worst guy for the job for some reason. Like he is the perfect. Like thing at the moment, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, I think perfectly. Peacemaker is exactly what we would just have.
You're the only one who can deal with these pig cops, like and aliens or whatever.
They don't quite explain why in the series, but they just do. You know, he just shows up. Like it seemed like he was the only one to either survive an accident, and that's why he's there, or he's the first one who applied. To be the world savior.
Well, I think like Duke Nukem 3D, like the first episode, just like he was flying over a city in a spaceship, and they blew it up because he's just like, those damn aliens shot my ride, and then he's that's this whole like reasoning for like taking on this whole like alien army is because like, they blew up his spaceship, whatever he was in.
Was he on Earth in 3D?
I don't. I mean, it's like he was flying over like what like Los Angeles, whatever weird future city it was like San Angeles or whatever it was. But yeah,
he's just flying around.
It just starts like you see your ship like crashing in the distance and you're on a roof, and then you're just like, all right, I gotta kill all these pig cops.
No, no, no. See, Duke Nukem 3D takes place after Duke Nukem 2, where basically Duke Nukem has been in space for like,
yeah,
some time.
Oh, so he came back, like he's coming back to Earth in Duke Nukem 3D, and he's
then he gets shot down. So it's like it's the next day.
It's like a Planet of the Apes situation where like the pig cops took over or something. Or the aliens took over Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah. Like, pretty much, in the events of Duke Nukem 1, it's just Duke Nukem wasn't, like, who he is, basically. He's just, like, a soldier.
Yeah.
Duke Nukem 2, the planet Earth has been enslaved already. And then he's, like, in space because they've been trying to, like, brainwash him, but he breaks free and then, like, is just fighting all in space. I never played Duke Nukem 2.
Well, like, Duke Nukem 1 and 2 are, like, side-scrolling, like, Commander Keen style, like, games, where it's, like, he has, like, no personality.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, 3D is the first one where it's, like, he's got the sunglasses on, he's, like, doing all the one-liners, like, kicking people, and, like, going to strip clubs and stuff. Like, 3D is the one where, like, it's, like, Duke Nukem became Duke Nukem.
Yeah, so basically, the events of Duke Nukem 3D is just the aliens have mutated, like, the, like, people. So there's aliens too, but the pig cops are actually like real humans that got turned into pigs.
Yeah.
So it's not like a whole big, like aliens have been there for a while. Though it's weird that they invaded, but they also like terraformed certain buildings to be futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I kind of forgot. That's why I was like, is this Earth? I always forget that.
Yeah, it's like Los Angeles.
But, you know, we know what happens after 3D and just becomes a goddamn void of Duke Nukem games of
that are just
not canon, are canon, and just doesn't make sense.
But, we'll see what the Cobra Kai guys can do, if they can get this off the ground. I mean, Cobra Kai is great, so I'm sure they can probably figure out some fun way to bring Duke Nukem to, like, the present day in a movie form. And that's pretty much it for news this week. So why don't we jump into show and tell? And Chris, did you see anything over the last week or so here?
I did. I finally saw the latest Bond movie, or the last Daniel Craig Bond movie.
Yes.
However you want to phrase it and feel sad about. I definitely avoided like certain spoilers to get to this far, which I just credit like actual people not posting things online and stuff. They kind of waited until it was kind of more like accessible to watch, because then like after I saw it, like people were posting on it more about it, so now I'm like, oh thank god I avoided all those spoilers.
Well, did it just hit like Prime Video like recently?
I think because that's how I saw it. I saw it on Prime. I was like, I have no reason not to see it now.
I think within the last couple of weeks it hit Prime Video. Which I'm assuming is part of like Amazon now owns MGM. So, although isn't it, Sony does the is it a Sony movie or is it like I guess it's still MGM. It's like MGM and like the Broccoli family or something. Still for Bond movies,
right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Because they have to like work. Because if Amazon wants to like make any like more Bond movies, they have to like work with the Broccolis, because the Broccolis own like 50% of the Bond franchise still. So,
I mean, they're still gonna make money until basically that course is basically dead.
Yeah.
Even then, I don't see the Bond going away. You know, it's kind of like ingrained in action spy culture. But
no time to die.
This movie was, you know, a nice swan song. It wasn't exactly how I would send it off. It kind of has crazy, convenient plot things to sort of explain things. And it probably one of the weakest Bond villains. It starts strong with him, but it starts piddling really quick. Like, it peters out right after they reintroduce him.
The whole movie starts out strong. Like, that opening action sequence is like fucking awesome. With the BMW, yeah, with the car and everything, and like,
sitting. The first part is the lake. The second part is the BMW, and then the shootout in Italy.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, that flashback sequence is pretty great too. But that whole wherever they are in Italy, that whole sequence was the title sequence, like, which is like.
The opening title comes to
30 minutes into 40 minutes of the movie. It's like
it is a pretty long opening act. But I'm gonna say, was Vespa Lynn Italian?
I don't know why they like buried her in like this weird like Italian mountain village or something. Like
she brings it up never in the series. It's also implied that basically, like, she came from I get, because in the first movie, Bombi, he kind of, like, analyzes her. He's like, you come from, like, no money. Like, you got to earn this. Like, you have to keep fighting for this. And it's like, he didn't say, also, you're Italian because of, like, the way you dress, eat, carry yourself. Like, none of that. And it just seems like they randomly picked this Italian village. And then, if you think about the logic of the plot, Spectre's just been waiting for them for years, just in case this happens, right?
Yeah.
Just in case Bond decides to pay respects. But, yeah, like, it's such a, like, crazy intro that I think is a nice, like, it really is a closure, but it's not... The weight of it is very weak, only because they're just closing all these like plot things as fast as they can to get to the end.
Yeah. Well, it's also crazy like the time jump between like after the like the credit sequence. It's like 5 years later. It's like I was like, what? Like
yeah. The 5 years later part was a lot. I didn't expect it to be 5 years because, you know. You just like, wait, why is it that long? What has Bond been doing? And you realize he's been doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. He's been hanging out in Jamaica.
He's not even like making a crazy man like red string pitcher board.
Nope. He's just
sulking.
Yeah, he just fishes and hangs out in Jamaica until Felix shows up for help.
Right, and again, the what happens there was pretty cool. His mission, the doctor, but the doctor feels like he's something straight out of like Stranger Things,
like the Russian guy who like develops like the nanobots or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, the scientist guy who was just like a total like I don't know, like he's. It just doesn't fit in a Bond movie like this.
Yeah.
Because he's, like, funny, you know? Like, it's like, oh, he's a bumbling, funny scientist. But he's also super racist.
He would fit in if it was not a Daniel Craig. Like, he doesn't fit the Daniel Craig series. He would fit
he's like a Timmy like Dalton.
Yes. Yeah. Or like
I get that feeling. Or even a Roger Moore.
Yeah.
But that's why I was like, I don't know why this is happening. This is totally out. Like, it's trying to, like... Another thing, I was like, it's trying to be more funny than, like, gritty. So, it just tonally was weird. Same thing with, how many times they kind of make jokes along the way on missions and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what's her face? Well, Admin.
The whole Cuba sequence is, like, so, like... light and fun and like yes. and then like the rest of the movie just like is like so dour and like it like just like it's like horrible things happening but for that one like 15 minute sequence when like Ana de Armas is there and they're like hanging out like they're like doing that like wacky like it's just like classic like Bond like wacky action stuff
it's a mix of like Daniel Craig just being like a kill machine and then he still has time like for wit in a drink he still has time to like take a break like compliment take a shot and then go back at it mm-hmm. I'm like that's a like finally like we're getting the Bond that is sort of the best of both worlds. It took him 5 movies to get to this point.
Yeah, and then we only get like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then he's like back to like super, super, like he's just like super dour for the rest of the movie.
Yep. I just gotta point out, like, I quite did not know what the villain's ultimate goal was, because I get what his weapon was, but let me explain that.
Okay, yeah.
I get what his weapon was, because it's like, oh, it's a cool nano gas thing, like, that only delivers when you touch, like, your target. So I get that. Indirectly, you touch him. Not if you breathe, not if you spill it in the air, I guess, but it can also be aerosol, too. Because the Spectre Agents die by the thing. That was the point of the thing of this villain, Rami Malek's villain, is that he's got like vengeance against Spectre and then plus Bond, because actually not even Bond. Bond just happens to be there. But it's mostly a Spectre thing. He completes his objective quick. Like he got what he wanted. But now that they kind of figure out, oh crap, they've got this super weapon that they shouldn't have developed. Like, that's why Bond has to go after it. But it's not like Rami Malek's hostaging the world, or he's got a missile pointed at like key structures, or like, you know, he has a hostage. Bond kind of throws him a hostage. You know, Bond is the one that like puts it in his path.
Well,
instead of like height, yeah.
I was just gonna say it's weird because like Rami Malek, like he like accomplishes his goal, like he is like I want to steal this nanobot thing and kill Spectre, and he does, and then but then he's just like, well, I guess I'm just gonna like be a Bond villain now and like hold the world hostage with this nanobot, or like sell us on the black market or something. But like his there's no really like any sort of like reasoning after he like accomplishes his like Spectre revenge. He's just like, eh. I guess I keep doing this. I don't know. Like, he does, like, yeah, he's just like, he accomplishes his goal in, like, the first hour of the movie, and then it's just like, there's, like, really no reason for him to keep going, except he's just evil. Like, he's an evil Bond villain that he has to, because it's in the script. Like,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just convenient plot things, just because.
Because he seemed like he was like very like consumed with like personal revenge, and then just like, and then it's like he wants the revenge against Spectre. And then, he keeps Madeline Swan for like, because Mr. White was he wants revenge on him too, like from the grave or whatever. But then this whole like world, like his like world threatening plot is sort of like this like weird secondary thing of just like he's like just doing it on a whim, because he has the stuff, he might as well do it. Like,
yeah, he had the poison, he just didn't have the nanobots.
Well, he's using like his family's like old, because like his family used to be like the poison makers for Spectre, but he's using like their like island hideout, which it's great. Daniel Craig finally gets like a like Bond villain with like an island hideout.
Yes.
Finally, but
again, finally a classic Bond thing where he's to infiltrate, but he doesn't do it with like putting out a tuxedo. Like, he's almost like he's like an SAS operative in this one.
Yeah. But yeah, they're using like the like poison, old poison garden like manufacturing facility to like, it's been like turned into like a nanobot facility,
and in like an injection nanobot machine
they're gonna launch missiles that have nanobots in them, and then they were selling to like, oh,
so,
like,
no, so they were sort of have the capability, right? They don't show you that they have missiles, but they were just talking about selling them to someone who is in a boat. So,
yeah,
so that's another crazy thing. Like, so Japan, Russia, and the USA are watching this island. So is Britain too, because they figure out where it is. Bond tells them location, but M sends Bond and other 007 to go in that island that is constantly being watched by other nations, and like they couldn't detect these two speeding like frigates coming to the island. Like, I get Bond used like a stealth plane, so I get why he couldn't. But the other boats did it. Wouldn't it be easier to shoot those two boats than it is to do everything else? Right?
Yeah.
I just like, so I like read, it was like, wait, like it's way more safe to destroy those boats to reach the island than it is to blow up the island, especially when you really want to prevent things. And it's like, oh, we just don't want to explain to other nations what's going on. It's like, well, don't then. Just say like, hey, those boats are dangerous. We need to destroy them. Like, why?
Well, I guess because like Britain didn't be like, hey, we created this like horrific nanobot weapon that's like that could like kill anyone on the planet. Like,
but you still are gonna explain shit when you blow up an island that's like on a sort of sovereign part of this landmark. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's. It's a very strange contingent thing where it's like, no, they're aware of what goes in and out of that area, but except for this one part. And it's like, no, we're destroying this one part. It's like, yeah, why? It's like, you're going to need to explain that regardless of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like they just kind of make it seem like Bond dies for all these reasons. That's another thing. Like Bond really build up that like watch Bond struggle at the end. Like you just are sympathetic, and I was like, oh no, like this is how he goes. His big like end game moment.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty proper. It was a little weird though, because it's like, I'm pretty sure all you could have done was just not be near Madeline. But he probably couldn't outswim the rockets, maybe? Because then it's like, I don't know why he didn't... Because it's not like it was like being a nuke, where it's like you have a huge radius and everything's being radioactive. It just seemed like they had generic like Hellfire missiles.
Well, he had to like... The cell doors had to be kept open. Like they were like, whatever, it got damaged or something. So he had to open the doors... like so that the missiles could like hit the facility and destroy it or something.
But who else is on the facility besides, I would say, if it doesn't blow up the bunker, then like send in another team, or like, you know, don't, I get it, like if like Rami Malek did it, like that's why he killed him, and it's like you can leave now, like even if it doesn't destroy the place, send in another unit.
Well, it's also like he can never touch like Madeline or Matilda ever.
Okay, so I get like you couldn't, he would rather die than be away from her and like his kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I feel like that was such a like, it had to be there. Like, you know, like it's like, even if like you can't physically touch, it's like, would you rather die? Or, you know, like I'm just saying the alternatives and stuff.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like he was being poisoned, you know, like he was gonna die regardless. It was one of those things where it's like he was mortally wounded and stuff. I could see, but it was like, no, he seemed fine up until the last moment. So I'm okay with how he went out. I just
it's nice that like a Bond actually got like an actual like closure and like a, like, because like pretty much every other Bond is just like, they make like one final terrible movie, and then it's just like, well, that didn't work. We're recasting it. Like, it's like, you know, like Roger Moore had like, what was his last movie? Like,
A View to a Kill, maybe?
Yeah, or something. And obviously, whatever happened, like, Timothy Dalton got two movies, and they're like, this isn't working. And then, like, Die Another Day with Pierce Brosnan. Like,
yes. Okay. So I can see what you mean.
Like, no, got like a, this is your final movie. Like, we're going to like totally like wrap things up and. Like, this is like a send off. Like, no, they really got a send off. They were just like, here, it's the next movie, and it's a crazy, terrible mess. And then we like it causes us to like reset the entire franchise.
Okay, no, I could see that. Like, I understand that, and it's cool that they got to finally an end.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just wonder what to do next. And even at the end of this movie, it just says James Bond will return. So
yeah,
that's a nice nod.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see what the reboot is. Like, if it's gonna be like, is it gonna stay serious, or they're gonna just like go back to like Wacky Bond, or like.
I don't know. I'm waiting for the gritty Austin Powers reboot series now.
Well, I know I've read some people were saying like, oh, they should make it should be like a period movie, like set it in the 60s. And then you could go back to the Cold War Soviet stuff, because like it's like it, that was definitely like a weird part of like this too, where it's like you have like this like, you know, James Bond who's like for most of his most of the movies is like he's fighting like the Russians or like the Soviet Union or whatever, because it was all Cold War stuff. Now it's just like modern day, it's just like who is the villain, or like you gotta figure out like what role like this like, you know, this like British spy has on like global like global like politics or global like conflict.
Right. I didn't mind. Like, if they go back to a period piece movie, I'm fine with that. If they, I'm always a fan for more Bond.
They should just make it like hire Guy Ritchie, and just let him make, basically let him make Man from U.N.C.L.E., but it's actually Bond. Like,
yep, I'm okay with that too.
So, did you see anything else besides No Time to Die, Chris?
I saw Grand Budapest Hotel because I'd never seen it before. I'll keep it short. I liked it. It's another great like comedy and like from Wes Anderson.
Yep.
That like it's very visually stunning. It's very heartwarming in weird ways. But it's one of those things where like everyone in this show or like, everyone in this movie is just like a Wes Anderson like caricature, and everyone talks fast, everyone thinks fast, everyone just sort of has like style to them that like if you haven't seen a Wes Anderson movie in a while, like it's sort of jarring, because you're like, oh, especially if you just like watched Bond before and then you watch the Wes Anderson movie, it really is like a different feel to experience these movies. That being said, it's another movie that you definitely need to watch something right after it, and just because it ends on a downer note too. Like, it's a great buildup, but then it's sort of like the realization of story, and then the drama is pretty big, and you're like, ah, like it's, you know, it kind of doesn't end on a happy note like some Wes Anderson movies does. This just kind of ends on like, oh, like life is real, and then like shit happens. So I wasn't expecting that. I kind of knew, like, I know of the movie where it's like, yeah, like all these kind of like clues and like the themes, but when you watch it, you forget, and then you like you kind of get like another like, oh, this is not like a feel good at the end moment. This is gonna be just a sad ending, but it's sad if you like, you know, think about it. If you just didn't pay attention or care, you know, it's whatever. But I don't know. After Bond, I do not marathon like. Two movies like No Time to Die and Grand Budapest Hotel. It's just gonna be a sad night. But I recommend it to people who haven't seen it. I feel like the hype was worth it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also on Amazon. So try to watch them separate weeks. Well, what about you, Zach? What have you been watching?
I saw a bunch of stuff. So I saw X, the horror movie that came out earlier this year. So, you know, A24 joint, and it's from Ty West, who, you know, previously directed The Innkeepers and House of the Devil. And then he hasn't made a movie in like 6 years. So this is his first movie in like 6 years. But yeah, so X is basically like the elevator pitch for it is like, it's basically like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre mashed up with like Boogie Nights. Because it's basically this film crew from Texas goes to like this like this like kind of remote farmhouse because they want to shoot like a porno movie there, but then it's like farmhouse is run by like this like creepy old couple, and then it yeah it's and then the, and then horrible stuff started happening to the film crew. But yeah, it's fun. Definitely some crazy gore and crazy other stuff that happens in it. So if you wanna see some like some crazy horror gore stuff and like other crazy stuff in it, definitely way more like classic horror or like slasher style than like typical A24 stuff, because like you know what if. Other A24 stuff like The Witch or something, it's like a very like slow burn, and this is like this gets into stuff pretty quick, and then it's like a lot of crazy kills and so it's definitely more of like what people like or like horror fans would probably expect from like because then it lives up to like the premise in the trailer and stuff, and like it's not like a lot of A24 movies like they kind of have like this like trailer and it's like oh this is gonna be like a normal horror movie that's like it's like this like really weird slow burn that's like has nothing to do with the trailer, and this one X is like definitely like more lives up to what the trailer was like selling, which is like this like you know Texas Chainsaw kind of style slasher movie. So so yeah, definitely check that one out if you want to check out some like Texas Chainsaw style modern horror. And then I also got to check out the horror movie, or I guess sort of more of like a horror comedy, I guess, or like horror home like homage movie. But I saw All About Evil. I got a review copy of that, which is out. It came out on Shudder this week. Apparently, it came out in 2010 at like the San Francisco International Film Festival, and then kind of like and then had like a super limited theatrical run, and then kind of disappeared because like the rights distribution company fell through, or like something happened with like the rights or distribution rights or something. So it's been kind of like sitting out there, not being seen by anyone for 12 years or whatever. But now, Shudder has the streaming rights. Severin Films, who do like a bunch of like cult Blu-ray stuff, is putting it on Blu-ray, or it's already on Blu-ray for them. So. But this is a Natasha Lyonne starring movie. So you know, obviously she's been in like Russian Doll recently and stuff like that. But she is this character named Deb Turner, or Deb Tennis, who runs like this like old kind of movie house, the Victoria Theater. They show a lot of like cult horror movies. Like her father ran it, and like he like loved horror movies. He loved like the theater and movies, and that rubbed off of her. But then her like evil stepmother or mother is like trying to like, he dies, and then she's trying to sell the theater, and then Deb kind of freaks out, and she's been like this mousy like quiet librarian, and then runs the theater on the side, but then she finally just like snaps and kills her stepmother in the middle of the theater or in the lobby.
Oh.
Because she's like yeah, sell it, like you're a your father was she's like this like her stepmother or mother is like this like crazy just over the top like your father was like he was horrible, you're horrible, you're worthless, like just like a Disney like stepmother, evil stepmother character. But yeah, so like Tasha Love kills her, and then like kind of runs, because like it's like right before like a they're gonna show like Blood Feast, like the classic like splatter movie at the theater. So then she she has to run upstairs and start the projector, but then she actually turns on the surveillance footage that shows her killing her stepmother on the screen. But then everyone thinks it's like original horror movie that she shot, so they're like, oh man, that was great, like that's a great horror short that you made. And then she's like, oh okay. And then, so then she decides, like, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to make movies, quote unquote, but I'm going to murder people. I'm going to make snuff movies, but like play them off as like original horror shorts that I'm going to show at the theater. And then that, like, she's making them, and then like, it increases the popularity of the theater like tenfold. Like tons more people are showing up. Everyone's like, oh man, you're a genius. You're like this like great filmmaker. Like, so then, but then so it, like, totally goes to her head, and she becomes like this like She like adopts this like very like pretentious accent, like not Natasha Lyonne apparently was like modeling off of like Joan Crawford and like Betty Davis and like Mae West. It's like this very like 40s style like accent she's doing when she turns like this like auteur, and she starts calling herself Deborah. So like her actual name is like obviously Deborah, but she's like, I'm Deborah now. I'm a director. And then she also like hires like this insane film crew of like there's like this guy that's just like they found on the street like mugging an old lady and like almost like basically killing her on the street, and then like these two like twins who are like locked up in a mental institute for like 18 years. She like hires them to be like her film crew slash like work at the theater. So yeah, so basically just like just keeps like escalating like these like movies and killing people, and then eventually one of the regulars at the theater, Steven, who's played by like, Thomas Decker from like the I think he's in like the Sarah Connor Chronicles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He starts to realize, oh, like people I know are missing. he ends up going to like the theater with like one of the popular girls, but she like vanishes, and he's like, oh, at first he thinks like, oh, she just ditched me and like went home, but then it's like, oh no, no one knows where she is, and last night I thought it was at the theater. So he starts like trying like piecing together like trying to piecing it together like, oh, that's something weird is going on at the theater. So it's fun. It's definitely super over the top. It's definitely like it's definitely paying homage and trying like kind of mash the tone of like a lot of like cult midnight movie stuff. Mm-hmm. They name drop a ton of like classic movies. There's like a bunch of people who are like horror icons are in it, Cassandra Peterson, Elvira herself, is Thomas Decker's mother. And also like there's like Mink Stoll, who was like one of like John Waters' regulars. She's like she plays one of the victims. She's like a librarian that like gets murdered by Deb and her crew. And then they also like the projectionist at the theater, who also becomes like Deb's like main cameraman. He's played by Jack Donner, who's been like he's like a big Star Trek guy. He's been in a bunch of Star Trek stuff. They definitely like make him look and like act like he's like if this movie had been made like when Vincent Price was still alive, it would be Vincent Price. But they like, definitely like, make him like he looks like Vincent Price. They have like act like Vincent Price. So,
What's the actor's name again?
Jack Donner.
Yeah, I'm like looking him up. That's why I'm like I could see.
Just definitely like his hairstyle and like his like they have him in like a bunch of like kind of like Usher suits and like different suits and stuff. So like he doesn't have the voice. Like you can't unless you're Bill Hader, you can't match like the Vincent Price voice. But like
it definitely seems like
what they're trying to do is like, trying to like, make him like evoke Vincent Price in his the way at least in the way he looks and stuff. So
I mean, I just took a quick like look at this movie like to see the like it sounds better. Then, like, wait, not saying like it just sounds interesting that like I'm surprised it didn't get like a wider release.
Yeah, something weird happened after like debuted at that film festival, and then like it's just been like they haven't been able to put it out for over a decade till now. But super fun like homage to like cult midnight movies, that kind of like that sort of like environment and like the and then like yeah, tons of name drops to like classics like Blood Feast and Vincent Price movies and stuff like that. So it's on Shudder, so if you want to check that out. And also if you're a Natasha Lyonne fan, like she does like she's just doing like this like crazy like over the top crazy performance in it. So and then I also, totally changing directions, I saw the Kurt Russell classic, maybe, or like definitely deep cut, Breakdown from 1997.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I bought that at a thrift store for like $2 on DVD recently. So I'm like, because I've always wanted, it's always been like, I've always seen it pop up on like different streaming services, but I have never really watched it. I'm just like, all right, I'm gonna get this and finally watch this. So, Yeah, super, super solid, like 90s thriller. It's basically the setup is like Kurt Russell and his wife are driving through the desert. They're on their way. They're moving from Boston to San Diego. They're in the middle of like the the southwest, like Arizona, New Mexico, the area. I don't know exactly where they are, but it's in that deserty area. And then their car breaks down, and Kurt Russell's wife, like a trucker, stops and like offers them like, oh, I'll drive her to like a diner up the street, and then she can call for like a tow truck. And then Kurt Russell manages to get his car, like his Jeep Grand Cherokee, which I think, I don't know if that was like brand new at the time or something, but they really play up the fact that it's like a Jeep Grand Cherokee in the movie. They like, it's like they're constantly just showing like the Jeep logo and stuff in it. So that must have been some sort of big like marketing or like endorsement deal or something for the movie.
I kind of forget the car part. I just remember like the truck kind of showing up like Jaws.
It doesn't really do, like, they don't really do that to him. I think are you thinking, like, Duel or something? Or, like, maybe it was, like, something like that, Chris?
No, it's, like, the one scene that I keep catching on TV is, like, when they're on, like, this bridge and, like, the truck is sort of, like, popping in and out.
Yeah, that's like the end of the movie, yeah.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah, that's, like, the big, like, climax. It's, like, there's, like, this huge, like, the truck, like, falls off the bridge and it's, like, they're, like fighting. It's, like, this crazy, like, I don't think it's, like, actually physically possible, but, this like giant tractor trailer falls off the bridge, but then gets caught in like a piece of like metal that's hanging off the bridge. So it's like hanging. It's like the whole truck is hanging off this like one piece of metal on the bridge. And then Kurt Russell, like the JT Wallace, who plays like the main bad guy, are like fighting each other on the truck as it's like falling off the bridge.
That's another thing. JT Welsh as like this unhinged trucker or serial killer trucker.
Yeah.
Like he just looks like such a like a 90s well, dad.
It's like a full like that guy crew of like kidnappers, because like it's JT Walsh, it's MC Gainey, it's like Rich Brinkley, who always played like kind of like homeless looking or like dirty trucker guys, and then Jack Noseworthy, who's also been in like a ton of like just like a character actor guy that shows a bunch of stuff too. So it's like this crew, this like evil crew of character actor guys are are the ones that kidnap Russell's wife.
But like, why? I always assumed the movie was you cut him off in traffic, and that was the point.
Well, that was just like the setup. But apparently they do this like they basically like this kind of patrol this kind of like area of this stretch of road or whatever. And if they seize people that they think have money or something,
human traffickers.
They're not really human traffickers. We're gonna force them to withdraw all their money from their bank account, and then they just kill them afterwards.
Oh, so they're just kidnappers.
Kidnappers and murderers, because they take Carlos's wife, and it's like, hey, you need to give us $90,000, or else you're we're gonna kill your wife. And then he has to figure then. Kurt Russell only has like, he can only take out like $5,000. He only has $5,000. So it's like he has to figure out a way like, I have to like fake this and figure out like how to like it's a lot of like I have to figure out my way out. Like Kurt Russell's like figure out his way out of this situation. Like either like steal stuff or try to get people's attention, or he steals like a letter opener from the bank and like uses it against the guys at one point.
Yeah, I always watch like the end where basically it's just the trucker line.
Yeah,
so that to me is like what I'm always thinking of.
I think there's in the beginning it seems like it could have totally gone this other way, and it would have been quite interesting too. But like there's this whole thing where like when Esther's wife gets kidnapped or disappears, like he sees JT Walsh again, and JT Walsh is like, I don't know who you are, like I never saw you. And then because like Carissa's flying down like a cop to like, it's like this guy. My wife was the last person that I saw him with was this trucker guy. And then it's like the cop like kind of looks around and is like, oh, there's no one in this truck. I don't know what you're talking about. So it's like that would have been interesting if it's like the whole town was in on it, or like it's just like is like Kurt Russell possibly crazy? Like it's pretty much just like straightforward. Like yeah, like the kid is it's straightforward. Like yeah, the kid and his wife like he has to get back, but like. That would have been interesting, like, is this whole thing like, in Kurt's head or something would have been interesting, too, but... Because they kind of, like, it could have, like... There's, like, a split in, like, the timeline where that could have happened after that, after the scene where, like, he, like... It turns out, like, the truck, JT Walsh is, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I never saw you before.
Right, right.
Like, but yeah, fun, nice thriller if you want to watch like a kind of a deeper cut Kurt Russell movie. The trucker kind of like road stuff. It kind of has like Black Dog vibes a little bit, although Black Dog was like way crazier action wise with like big rig chases and stuff. But it's in that kind of like trucker action. Yeah, like 90s B thriller movie. So
I definitely remember the trailer because they always make it seem like the trucker is alone doing all the kidnapping and hunting, and then it's like. Yeah. Never go to like desert roads alone or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It's definitely like yeah, it's like never go to like small towns in the middle of nowhere because you're gonna.
There's no cops, no one's on the road.
Especially if you're like yuppies from Boston, like you're gonna get kidnapped and possibly murdered. So, but yeah, so I saw that. And then just a couple quick, superhero TV stuff. I finally got caught up with all the episodes of The Boys so far for season 3.
I watched like two episodes in.
Okay, because I watched Stranger Things first. Stranger Things obviously was like every episode was like almost a movie basically. So that took
a lot out of you.
Yeah, so I've seen all 4 episodes so far of The Boys. Episode 5 is like if you're hearing this, it's already up. But it's as good as it was. If you like The Boys, it's possibly even crazier and more over the top this year than it, especially like that first episode with like the opening where like they're like dealing with like that termite guy. Oh my, that's like, is this how they open the season? Like, I don't even know what they're gonna do with like for like that Hero Gasm episode. Like,
is that part of this first 4, or is it like later?
I think it's episode 6. I think it's Hero Gasm. So we're waiting for Hero Gasm. But I'm just saying, like, just like the fact that they open the season with like a guy like shrinking himself and going into another guy's dick, like.
Yep, that's just like episode 1.
Yeah. Like where, like, if that's like where we're starting, like where are we, like where are we gonna end up for this season? And just every like, and just like. They're like ramping up even more like Homelander's like just like insanity and just like his like scariness because like no one can do anything about him.
Yep. And just, it's like just how do you stop a Superman? Like you have to do all these other things.
And just like he's just, like even like just gets more and more unhinged every episode.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy to think that, like you made this, Vought made this monster, and then they just don't have, like, a good contingency plan, besides, like, we'll just micromanage him in case he does go off the rails, then we'll do something, because in the comic version, they're very, like, business for it where it's like all right like he's still profitable up until like we can't make money and it takes like a while for them to not make money and even if it's like tragic they're like no like it's still projected we can still make more money like in the like counterbalance of stuff so in the show they didn't really get to that point yet like I feel well, like if you're assuming
there's a lot of talk this like especially this season I mean I think they've always talked about it but like this season there's like a lot of talk about like ratings and like they're like oh you're like Starlight's ratings are like she has like a 98 audience score or whatever which is the highest we ever had and then like and then like Homelander
but then it's like don't tell Homelander that like it's like in the comic they don't tell him he kind of figures it out and then he starts kind of getting more unhinged but like they're just telling it to his face and it's like oh again in the comic not a spoiler, but I mean, they're probably going to do another twist. It's like, they've always had, like, certain contingency plans. And here, it's like, I don't even know how they're going to shoehorn it in, because there's certain areas that, like, they're just redoing the story. But, like, and then another thing is, the boys get their powers, like, issue 2. Like, it's like, the, like, 24-hour injection is, like, a thing they take. Like, there's a whole backstory about the arc where it's like, no, it's like how they can still, like, throw themselves against some of these heroes. So in this one where they kind of like tease it, it's like, oh, okay. But in this world of superheroes that have been around for 2-3 generations of people, because if you think how old Homelander is, and then you think how long in the comic version, they've been around since like the 30s, but they were like all like not proper, like the formula wasn't like stable. So it's like they sort of had powers, some didn't, so they're just like costume heroes. And just like, you know, this guy thinks he can fly. It's like he's never flown
before. Well, it seems like in the show's universe, like Soldier Boy is the first like major
super soldier, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I get, but it's one of those things where when the first comic book version of Soldier Boy shows up, he dies. Like Mallory actually is the one who, like, the original Mallory in the comic, like witnesses like Soldier Boy's like attempt at trying to stop a tank, and it just goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different. I'm definitely interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's as good as it has ever been. I mean, everyone's great on it. Carl Urban's still amazing. Anthony Starr is still great. Like everything. Like, so
I mean, this summer of movie watching or TV watching is amazing, because I know The Boys is like, I just want to watch like 2 episodes a night, and then like I'll cap it off with like Kenobi later. So it's like I need to pace myself. I can't just burn out just marathoning everything.
Yeah, and then we also have Miss Marvel has started 2 episodes in, which have you seen any Miss Marvel yet, Chris?
I have not.
It's a ton of fun. It's definitely like the most, I would say, like lightest so far of like Disney Plus shows. Like there's 2 episodes in, there's like not even like a threat yet. Like the threat is like damage control might arrest her or like want to talk to her, and that's it. But there's no they haven't like real like, oh, here's the big villain. Like it's mostly it's like feels more of like a sitcom or something than like a Marvel show. But still super fun, like visually amazing. Like it's like they're like going for like a Scott Pilgrim or like a live action like Spider-Verse or like Mitchell vs. Machine style thing, where it's like there's like constantly like doodles or like elements of the in the background like are like animated and stuff. Like there's a whole scene where like Kamala Khan and her best friend Bruno are like texting each other, and then you see instead of like the normal thing where like it's like a movie or TV show, like they just have to show like a screen and the like, text going on the screen, like you see like there's a text and it's like in like a neon sign that they're walking past, and like they like walk a little bit further, like the next text is like on the street and like the chalk or like on the pavement. So like it's like really just cool, awesome visual like flourishes all over the place. And just super super funny. Iman Vellani is like seems like the perfect Kamala. Like based on I haven't really read a lot of like comics, but I played like the Avengers like Square Enix game, and like I've seen like some like animated stuff. So based on like that stuff, like she seems like just like the perfect like live action version of Kamala. Like she's like super charming and funny, and like nails like the fangirl of like the Marvel heroes thing.
Right.
There's a great bit where like the first episode like basically revolves around like Avengers Con, which is like this like, you know, a big Avengers base convention, and she's like trying to like get her like Captain Marvel costume ready for the costume contest. But then she also has to convince her parents to, like, let her go to it, because they're super against it.
It's because of like basically it's just like against their culture, or it's more like we just don't like supporting heroes. Like it's weird to be anti-hero in this world where
It's more like they're very like concerned about, they don't want her like partying. I think her dad has a line where it's like, oh, we trust you, we just don't trust anyone else. So, and then her mom's like, I don't want you like everyone in their skimpy costumes, I don't want you going there, like something like that. But I mean also like obviously like ties in like because like their family's Muslim, so like they're like some of their like dies in their beliefs too. But yeah, just super fun, like pretty light show so far. Like, yeah, there's no like big threat yet. Like, I'm not 100% sold on her, like the new kind of style of powers where it's like she like projects like this like crystal light, basically. It's like this like solid crystalline light instead of like her stretching powers from like the everything from the comics and stuff. She like makes like crystal like hands and stuff, so they do kind of like play like the like, you know, like the stretching powers, but like now it's like a crystal arm kind of thing. But like she's been doing a lot of like she like makes platforms that she can walk across, or like she can like throw that, like she can, like throw these like crystal like ball things at people. But yeah, there hasn't really been like a big like, oh, this is all this like full use of her power. I mean, it's definitely its origin story where she's like trying to, she's like she literally just got her powers and trying to figure out what the hell they are, where they came from. So, but yeah, I think it's gonna be 6 episodes. So we're 2 episodes in. Definitely gonna keep watching the whole thing. And yeah, so that's for me this week, so we can wrap things up. Definitely head over to the site. We got all of our regular features up there. I've got a review of All About Evil if you want to read my thoughts about that movie, and all the regular features up there as well. We got a review of the Dread X Collection, which is a recent video game, like basically horror anthology, but in a game form where it's like like 12 mini horror games in one collection,
all themed after entertainment.
Yeah, so like circuses and old creepy old video games and
puppet shows, art galleries.
Yeah. So that's up there. You can check that out. And coming soon is going to be our Invasion USA commentary. So definitely stay tuned for that. That'll be up in the next week or so here. And yeah, so for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you next week. For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.